B-Pod Studios.
And now, I'm just trying to spell it out for the listener.
Felger and Mast.
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
T-E-P-I-D.
B-O-B.
Boob.
Isn't that Bob?
Felger and Mast.
Q-U-I-T quit.
Okay, thank you. No, spell up for me too. I'm an idiot.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, hour number two, Felger and Maz, presented by DraftKings. Felger here from our Tom Fratera studios in Dorchester in the A-hole chair. Maz and Murray on remote. You just heard Murray report. The owners approved baseball's plan to go forward with the season this year. They'll present it to the players tomorrow. Just a few quick bullet points of this plan, according to Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic. Regular season beginning early July, consisting of approximately 80 games. That means it could be not exactly 80, could be 78, could be 82. The schedule would be regionalized. And if this has changed or been updated, please stop me and let me know. But this is based off of what was reported over the weekend. Teams would face opponents only from their own division and the same division in the opposite league. So they wouldn't go to those new 10-team divisions as had been speculated last week. Instead, the AL East would play the only in the AL East and the NL East. And that's
correct.
It. So,
correct.
Sox would just play their division and then the NL East, and that's it. So, Rosenthal says a 78-game schedule might look like this, for example. 4 3-game series against each division opponent and 2 3-game series against each non-division opponent, probably home road, and there's how you get to 78 games. All right. He says that teams would open in as many home parks as possible, with even New York potentially in play by early July. He says teams unable to open in their cities temporarily would relocate either to their spring training sites or major league parks in other parts of the country. The same would apply to spring training 2.0 if the league decides to use mostly home parks as opposed to returning to Florida and Arizona. And again, that's sort of the plan, that you do spring training at Fenway Park if you can do it. And if you can't, then you go to Florida. And if you can't, then you find another park. And that's sort of what it is for every team. Rosenthal says expanded playoffs, similar to an idea first reported by the New York Post in February, with an increase of from 5 to 7 teams in each league. So 7 teams in each league would now make the playoffs. The first seed would get a bye. Then the second through 6 seeds would play in a wild card round to get you to the 4 divisional round opponents. He also says the players would be, this is going to be a big sticking point, the players would be asked to accept a further reduction in pay, most likely by agreeing to a set percentage of revenues for this season only. The players had agreed in March to prorate their salaries in a shortened season. Those salaries cover the regular season only, while postseason shares are based on gate receipts. If the players agreed to a set percentage of revenue, they would also share any additional national TV money generated during the postseason. Rosenthal says that the salary issue remains a source of friction. If the owners say it is not economically feasible to play games without fans, the union almost certainly would ask to see financial proof and ask the owners to open their books, which they haven't to this point. All right, Maz, your thoughts on all that?
Okay, so again, I don't love the idea of playing just in two divisions, but nonetheless, we're at a stage here. We're obviously got to make sacrifices in order to get games in. So the idea that the AL East would play only the AL East and the NL East, and they would put in a universal DH, I'm for. I mean, again, whatever it takes to be able to get some semblance of a season in play or in place so that you can play, fine. The money still scares the crap out of me. And I will say this, that prior to this call or meeting taking place today among owners to decide how they were going to split the money with the players, speculation was that the owners would offer players 48% or somewhere thereabouts. The number that came in just within the last hour is 50-50, which means it feels to me like the owners are making a little bit of a concession there, that they recognize the players got their panties in a bunch over this thing. And so they said, you know what? We'll go right down the middle. 50-50, you get half, we get half, and that's how we're going to split the revenue. If the players shoot this down, I think all kinds of problems here. All kinds of problems, at least the money part of it.
So again, just in case you don't, so the players already agreed to prorate their salaries based on the number of games played, okay? So the players are already saying, well, look, we've taken our cut, meaning, you know, you're just going to pay us for the games that we play. All right, so we're not going to give you any more concessions. Well, the owners come back and say, well, 40, I think it's 40% of our revenue is based on those gate receipts, meaning fans in the stands. We're not going to have fans in the stands. Okay, it's just going to be pure TV money in empty stadiums based on a half season and then a refigured playoff. So the revenues are going to be different. We can't just give you what your prorated salary is. We have to give you a whole new salary based on what the new revenues are, to which the players say, you know, number one, we don't want that. But if we do, then open your books and we have to see exactly what it is that you're making. And owners have always been reluctant to do that. Always, 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 because there's all sorts of hidden things that they're, you know, scamming on there. So they don't want to open up their books. And that's going to be the loggerheads right there. And, well, you think the players actually this time, Maz, have a little bit of a case?
Well, yes and no. Okay, so look, on the one hand, I understand their argument. And their argument is that, okay, look, in any given season, if all of a sudden more revenue comes through the door than we than people were anticipating, it's not like the owners have gone out of their way to give it to us. In other words, the contract that pays Mike Trout $35 million, but then MLB revenues were 10% higher than expected, they don't bounce Mike Trout's contract by 10%. He still gets a $35 million. I get that. And that's the argument people are making on the players' behalf. At the same time, I would tell you, was there a pandemic? Like, are right. we really going to compare, like, you know, market sway one way or the other to the effects of a pandemic? Are we really going to do that? And I happen to think, again, I tend to lean against the Major League Baseball Players Association when it comes to bitching about money, because I think that the baseball players have way too much power in general. So I look at it and I say, okay, fine. The initial deal that they had, as you pointed out, if we play half the season, you get half your salary. But that assumes that people were coming into the ballpark to buy tickets, which they are not. Like, I do feel it is incumbent on the players to take a little bit more of a haircut here. And again, I'm not telling you I'm pro-owner, but I'm telling you that every employee in America is just about has taken a pay cut or lost a job or been furloughed on some level. Here's the part ultimately that drives me bananas on the players. Okay? So let's just make it nice and easy and say a player with a $20 million salary. A player with a $20 million salary, you cut the schedule in half. In theory, he should get 10. Okay? You follow me?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's now the owners are saying, well, it's actually a little bit less than that because we're not selling tickets. So it's 8.
Right.
Okay. So the players are now saying, well, we're the ones taking the risk, so we should be paid what we're supposed to be paid. Okay, so if they pay you 10, you'll take the risk. But if they pay you 8, you won't?
Hmm.
So is it really about the risk? So you're willing to sacrifice your life for $2 million more to go from 8 to $10 million, at least or so you claim. But you're not willing to do it if it's only $8 million? I call bullcrap. You're willing to do it either way. You're just negotiating, which I get. Excuse me. But I think that the players are disingenuous about it, and I think at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of lost revenue there, and if it comes in higher at the end than they expect, then negotiate that in, that you get your money back. That's fine, too. But they're not going to play before fans. I don't understand how the players can think they're going to get 50% empty, half their salary if they play half a schedule and the stadiums are empty. That's not realistic.
I'm still ready to get...
They're the most coddled and empowered professional athletes, and in... You know, 99 out of 100 times, I am players against the owners, I'm worker against the employer. But in this case, it's such an extreme circumstance because of the pandemic. Just accept it and take it and get out there. Because here's the thing, too, and I don't know, I think you put it in the email chain, Maz. If they can't figure this out, when they've ultimately, if they agree on things like the big things, testing, safety for the teams, everyone involved, league realignments, all this stuff, but they get hung up on the money, well, I hope the sport burns forever.
Me too.
You know, like, if you can't figure it out in this circumstance and put your product out there, F off.
Yeah, I've been ready to get pissed off at the players the entire way. They haven't blown anything up yet. But every time I hear there's a little pushback or, even an innocuous comment by Tony Clark who says, well, they haven't put anything formal in front of us. Like, I feel the undercurrent, I feel the tone, and I feel my back getting up against those baseball players. And I feel the same way as you guys. I hold that union I'm almost always pro-player, except when it comes to that union. How about this piece real quick about the playoff format? So it would be the first seed in each league gets a bye, and the other six would play off in a wild card round. Those would not be single eliminations. Those would be two best two out of three to determine the three teams coming out of wild card weekend, if you will, wild card round. And the number one seed is then sitting there for what? I don't know, 5, 6, 7 days waiting for those other six teams to play off. How do you feel about that?
Well, so I'll tell you what, I don't mind it. I think it would, if I remember right from earlier on, they're not going to make they're not going to have an off day in there, Mike. So they're going to play the three games in succession on three consecutive days. And as it stands now with the one game playoffs, the teams that, you know, aren't in that play-in game, they do get 3 or 4 days off as it is.
Yeah.
Right? They typically don't start the playoffs till Thursday. And in some cases, even Friday, you don't see those division series start. So I don't think it's a huge deal. I think it actually allows you to get your pitching lined up and sort of take a little breather after playing 80 games. I don't think it's a huge problem. If it goes on much longer than that, it is. But a few days off, you can handle.
So I'm a big fan of those one-gamers. I love that single-game wild card format they have. It's the best thing any league has done in years and years and years. But it is the apocalypse. It's the apocalypse. So I'm willing to – we got to be willing to give a little something. So you want to go 2 out of 3 here just this year, no problem. But the next year when things return to normal, those better go back to one-gamers because those are the best thing the sport has to offer. So that's the baseball plan on the table. You want to weigh in? 617-779-0985. How do you feel about it as the Red Sox just playing the AL East and the NL East? I think that kind of blows. Both those divisions kind of bore me. So your thoughts before I go farther on that. We'll update you on the basketball as well with your calls, so don't go anywhere.
Boston's home for sports. Failure and Mads, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mads.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment. I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mads.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Woj, take us through Adam Silver, about a 60-minute phone call this evening with the Players Association. What are the key points that were made on that phone call?
Steve, Adam Silver was pretty candid with the players this afternoon on that call, talking to them about the possible resumption of play this season and what the future might hold. But in the short term, you know, Adam Silver talked about a 1 or 2 site model where players would go if the season were to resume. No decision on resuming the season likely any time in May and even well or into June at the very least, that the league believes they have time. He left open very much the possibility that regardless of whether this season is played, that next season could start sometime in December. And he painted a potentially grim financial future in this player-owner-league relationship, you know, based on lost revenue and no guarantees next year about how quickly and how fully arenas will be able to return with fans in them.
So on the NBA. Aren't you surprised, Maz? It's taken this long.
Yes.
I mean, for crying out loud, it's been 2 months now. The last NBA game was played March 11th. What's the date today? April 12th? Whatever it is?
May 11th.
I'm sorry, May. Whatever. Such a blur. It will go on 9 weeks, you know, since, and they have no idea. And the part that stood out the most there is no decisions need to be made into right now, and they can push it off into June, even into June, before they even come up with a plan. And remember, it had been in April, Silver saying, we're not going to make any decisions until May 1. And we sort of had it in our mind, well, you get to May 1, they'll have a plan to hit the ground running and sort of, you know, start the wheels spinning on May 1. And we're almost 2 weeks into May, and now it's into June. It's like, aren't you surprised there's no firmer grip on what it's going to look like, where we're going to be, where they're going to be, and they aren't able to narrow down a plan any more finely than they have? That stuns me.
Yeah, honestly, it's a little depressing, frankly. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. And I don't know about you, but when I start to talk to people now, the thing I'm hearing people say is they throw their hands up and they say, just cancel it. Cancel the hockey, cancel the basketball, and we'll start over. And I admit that even I have succumbed to some of that because I'm like, you know, where is it? Give it to me. Tell me what we're going to do here. And I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and it's not coming. And I find myself saying, you know, so when someone says it to me, my instinct is to say, you know what, maybe you're right. Like, and then I sort of calm down and say, no. No, you can't take that approach because I sort of, you know, to me there's a bit of a thing in play here that sports are a little bit of a litmus test for us, or a test case for us, that no, we've got to get them back out there. We've got to find something that works because we got to get back into our routines and get back to work. This is what we have to do, all of us. And so when I hear them approach it the way they do, I get a little bit demoralized, and I'm surprised they're not a little bit more aggressive and they're not a little bit farther along than we are right now. It's frustrating.
Yes, I feel like there's a lot of talking in circles, this big corporate meeting that we keep talking about where everyone just talks and no one decides anything and everyone just shoots down different ideas. And it's like, nope, you're going to have to pick one of several bad ideas. And basically everyone's not going to be happy. And so, you know, where's the pushback? Is it financial from the players? Is it this quarantine idea? And the more I think about the quarantine idea, what's really your problem with the quarantine? Because what are you doing now anyway? It's like, you know, that line we had last week from the gal who heads the NBA Players Association, that, you know, sending them all to Disney World or Vegas sounds like incarceration, which is an unfortunate overstatement, I think. Disney World is not incarceration, and making tens of millions of dollars playing basketball is not incarceration. But anyway, that whole premise that I only can go to the hotel and the gym, and that's the only place I can go. It doesn't, I mean, and when you say it like that, I'm like, well, that doesn't sound right either. Like, that doesn't sound great. What are you doing now?
Exactly.
What are you doing now? I mean, most of you two poor schlubs, you go from your bedroom to the freaking living room couch or your office. At least I get to come in here, but it's not like what am I doing anyway? Like, but the vast, vast majority of us are not even leaving the house. Never mind having a chance to go to the gym. Never mind having a chance to go do that at Disney World. So what are you talking about with, like, I don't want to be quarantined? We're quarantined.
Right, just different scenery would be a win.
Like, know? Jesus. So what, I mean, the Mike Trout line. Well, what, you know, that doesn't make much sense. Just the hotel and then the stadium. And, well, what would we do? What are you doing now?
Exactly.
Are you doing something now we don't know about? Because no one's doing anything, as far as I can tell, in most of these places. No one's doing anything. You're not supposed to be doing anything. So what's the difference if you go from your suite at the Four Seasons to the ballpark, or your home to ballpark? I know you'd rather be at home. I mean, I get that part. But if they allow your family in there as well, you're not doing anything anyway. You're just going from where you sleep to where you work anyway. That's all anyone's doing, if you're lucky. And if you're like the rest of us, you're just going to Murray's couch and petting his cat. Like, so what are you talking about, this hardship? It's what the world is dealing with. That's starting to frustrate me a little bit.
Well, and it should frustrate you. And again, I'll tell you, too, I think it's a little alarming, because I think what happens is that the longer we stay in, I think the more comfortable people get inside, and then they don't want, you know, a lot of them say, I'm good here, I'm not going back out there, because they're fearful of what's outside the door. And so, look, I think we're all fearful of it on some level, but I also think that it can't keep going the way it's going. It's just not realistic.
So on that... I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just think at some point, you know, you got to say, no, we're going to try and we're going to see what happens. That's what we're going to do.
We're going to pick a plan. We all hate it, but we're going to give it a shot. And we're done talking. We're done talking. Oh, God. I mean, I'm not even in these meetings. I can already feel my, you know, skin crawling with the useless chatter in these meetings. But Silver, just the way Woj wrote it. Makes it feel like he's somewhat adamant about the bubble idea or the neutral site idea. Silver said, returning to play this season at one or two potential sites, meaning Orlando for the East, Las Vegas for the Western Conference, made the most sense. He said, there's no point in adding risk for flying all of you city to city. And again, he's talking to the player now. The players on this conference call. There's no point in adding risk for flying all you city to city if there's not going to be fans, Silver said. We think it would be safer to be in a single location or two locations to start. Silver allowed that there would need to be some restrictions in place at a single or two site scenario. But he told players, quote, the goal is not to have you go to a market for 2 months to sit in a hotel room, end quote. Well, I mean, I don't know what else you're going to have them do. I don't know what's anyone else doing? What's anyone else doing but sitting in their living room? So, like, I mean, I don't know. The Disney World actually feels like it got a little bit of a room to roam there, for crying out loud. You got some golf courses in there, Maz? Like, I don't know. Turn on the Dumbo machine for the kids. Let them play in the pool. It feels like, I don't know. Like, I'd be okay with that one if I were a player, frankly.
Yeah, because, again, at least there would be some other options there. And, look, I mean, I understand that, you know, people like the comfort of their own home. I get that. And, you know, in this case, there's a safety element to that, too. You feel safe. You feel secure in the sanctity of your own home. I also think that, you know, they're going to be around people they know. There's going to be a comfort level in the environment. I think we're all getting a little too comfortable and complacent in sitting where we are. And I think sports is, I think they're right there in that group.
Joe and Stoughton, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What do you got?
Well, am I on the air?
Yes, you are, Joe.
All right, I had a question for you, because I've been listening the last couple of weeks, and I drive on the road a lot. And I got to tell you, if you guys don't take blood pressure meds, you guys should. I listen to the way you guys get animated in the afternoon, and it's great. Because I don't eat coffee in the afternoon when I listen to Tony Maserati, because he gets me all jacked up. But I just had a question for you. Would it be that big of a deal if we didn't have sports for a year until they came up with the cure and made everybody comfortable? Is it that big of a deal in this country not to have sports for a year?
Yes. I mean, to me it is. It's our business. It's what we do. It's very important.
Sure it is.
Very important to me and most of the people who listen to this show. So, yes. And, you know, we've had this conversation a million times. If you play that out, you say, well, is ice cream really important at a time like this? There's people dying. And if we just had to close the ice cream shops for a year to figure this whole thing out, is ice cream really that important? The answer is no, of course not. It's just freaking ice cream. But to the guy that owns the ice cream store, it's his life. So that's how I answer that question. So, yeah, the answer is it is really important, not just the fact that it's industry and people work in it, but there's a whole other component to it as well, that it's part of our life. It's part of our society. And that's just been totally wiped out for a lot of people. So I think it is important. And I think losing it for a year would be really, really rough.
Well, yeah, and the other thing, Mike, again, I do think there's something to be said for the fact that, you know, some of us are going to have to venture out there first, okay? It's just someone's going to step out there first.
Ah, Maz, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm just going to cut you there because someone has stepped out first. And if you want the NHL back, if you want the NBA back, if you want baseball back, there is a model. There is a model in terms of how they've done it practically, the attitude that they've taken, and it's already there. Because someone already has ventured out, and maybe they're leading the way. We'll get to that story right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
I know you saw the aerial shot of the Cleveland Cavaliers building. Kobe Altman, their GM, told me that you can go in one door and you have to go out the other door. You basically, there's a refrigerator at the end of the door and they don't even have doors anymore because you can't touch them. That's a far cry from NBA basketball, right? So yeah, you go in there and there's no door there. They want to limit the contact with surfaces. You know, shooting in a mostly empty gym with a player development coach with a mask on is not NBA basketball. But as soon as testing starts to ramp up, and that's what Adam Silver told the players on the call, within a month or two, they hope that testing around the country ramps up to the point where they can be testing their players regularly and enough so that everybody feels safe escalating things.
It's Ramona Shelburne at ESPN. I just wanted to play that because she's talking about in Cleveland, just to get a couple guys into the gym to shoot some jumpers, they removed the doors. So no one had to touch the doors. And the rebounder, again, in the PPE equipment, just to rebound the effing basketball. Okay? Just to get some shots in, Maz. And it's like, how are they able to... How is that going on there? When in Jacksonville, Florida, over the weekend, the UFC went ahead with a full wrestling card with guys sweating, spitting, snotting, bleeding on each other, rolling around on a mat after one of them tested positive on Friday. Think of that. The UFC went ahead. They had a positive test on Friday. They went ahead with the card with guys basically rubbing all of their bodily secretions into each of each other's bodily orifices for a full night. And the NBA, meanwhile, just to get one guy into the gym to shoot jumpers, remove the doors and put the guy in the PPE with the glove and the mask just to rebound one disinfected ball that they immediately wiped. Like, does it feel to be a little bit of a gap there between the way the two leagues are handling it? And UFC is going to lead us out of it. And I'm not telling you, Maz, you have a thought first real quick?
Well, so look, I would just tell you, it's frustrating. It's absolutely frustrating. Now, look, if I had to guess, the numbers of employees has something to do with it, okay? So that, you know, the UFC was able to test however many people they needed to test for a one-time event. You know, I say one time, but you know what I mean. Whereas in the NBA, it's going to be a daily thing and it's going to be more complicated, whatever, fine. But this brings me back to, I just thought we'd be farther along now.
Well,
I thought we would be farther along.
The UFC is farther along. And they're going to lead us. Now, I don't know where they're going to lead us. They could lead us to the return of sports and the return of life. They could also lead us right back into a second wave and more destruction. I'm not telling you which way they're leading us because I don't know yet, but they're leading. And, you know, they're dipping their toe in the water, Maz. And they had this card. This is really quite, I don't care about UFC. I didn't watch the event. I don't care about the fighting, but it's, you know, it's sports and, you know, they are going ahead. So what happened is they have a fighter named Ronaldo Souza. He was driving into Jacksonville from wherever he lives. And when he gets there, he drove to Jacksonville on Wednesday. So he's based in Orlando. So he's driving from Orlando to Jacksonville on Wednesday. Upon arrival, he informed UFC officials that he'd been exposed to a family member with the virus. So think of that. He'd been exposed to a family member with the virus, and he still got in his car and drove to Jacksonville.
Maybe make the phone call, dude.
Yeah, it's not like he called and said, "Yeah, my mom, who I live with, is tested positive. I'm going to stand down." No. He drove to the event and told him when he got there. At which point, apparently, they tested him. And they told him to leave the hotel. They had a quarantined hotel, you know, for all the fighters and all the personnel that they then took to the arena for the fight. So he apparently was supposed to leave the hotel, although it's disputed whether he really left the hotel or not. They don't know. But he was allowed to hang around and sort of interact with other fighters and other UFC officials. On Friday morning, I guess they hadn't gotten the test results back yet. On Friday morning, he was allowed to step on the scale for the weigh-in. He was wearing a face covering. But he did the weigh-in. He did some face-off stuff, you know, with the photos and whatnot. There's pictures of Dana White without the face mask, without any gloves, fist bumping this guy. And then on Friday, I guess they got the results and said, okay, you're positive, you can't fight. And they sent him home. They sent him away. But the card went on, and all the guys that he was interacting with, they fought. Or, you know, everyone involved at the weigh-in or the you know, the mean mugging, the pre-fight face-off thing, all those people fought. Dana White cavorted all weekend that I saw without gloves or a face mask, and he had some great sound after the event that I'll play you here coming up. But they just plowed right ahead. And again, I don't know which way that's going to lead us. I just know that's what it's going to take. It's going to take the league saying, we all have to assume some risk. It's going to take the players saying we're willing to assume this risk. And if one of us tests positive, we're all going to be okay. We're not going to shut it down. Like, to me, that's the most important thing.
So was your gut reaction good? Because mine was.
Yes.
Like, yeah, yep. Mine was too. Like, and you know, there's all those people on the other side. This is irresponsible. It's incompetent on behalf of the UFC. They shouldn't do this. But I'm sorry, like, if it's one guy who tests positive, but he's ultimately asymptomatic, I don't think that that should ruin the event and everything gets shut immediately right down.
Because it's not feasible. When we had heard about all these plans and these leagues modeling out their return, they all included this thing that if one player tests positive, they have to shut everything down for 2 weeks. To which I said, you can't do that. You can't bring the entire league to Las Vegas, quarantine 3,000 people, set up all the tests and all the personnel and all the ancillary things you need to get that thing going, then have one person slip through the cracks and test positive and shut the whole thing down and send everybody home? No. If someone tests positive, you've got to either have faith that everyone's going to be okay, that you have the testing in place to make sure everyone's as okay as they can possibly be, or just somewhere in the back of the minds of these athletes, they are young, they are in good shape, they are at the very lowest end of the risk scale on this whole thing, and if they get sick, they get sick. And it, just like anything else, if they get sick, they're going to have to go home and stay away from the team for a couple days or however long it takes. But the league will go on. The games will go on. That's what it has to be. It's what it has to be because there's not going to be enough testing in place. There's not going to be a vaccine in place. There just has to be this sort of level of acceptance that the UFC and Dana White has just plowed right ahead and accepted. Because it is, I'm telling you again, the contrast between the NBA with the, we're taking the doors off and it's one rebounder per one shooter and they are in a hazmat suit and we're wiping down that ball between every shot, and the UFC, it's like, yeah, come on in anyway, we'll test you, fine, fist bump here, yeah, come on in, we'll do some mean mugging, and okay, you're positive, fine, you go, the rest of you, you're fighting. And that's like, that is two ends of the spectrum. And if we want leagues back, it's going to have to be closer to the UFC thing. And I hope everyone's okay. I hope it doesn't lead us in the wrong direction. I'm just telling you, if you want sports, if you want society to open, you're going to need a few more Dana Whites. This is why Dana White said that he went ahead and did it.
Listen, I got over 350 employees with families, the fighters. It's almost like this thing, like I said, this thing with the media that was going on. What is wrong with continuing to do what you do if you can do it safely? And I just never understood, why don't we figure out solutions to these problems? And guys, I got a really nice house. Great house. I've had, you know, the time that I've spent in my house, I've had a blast. My kids are home. You know, it's been a great couple of months, to be honest with you. And I could just stay home and do this too. But why? Why do we have to do that if we can honestly figure out how to do this safely? Why?
Okay, so if you can do it safely, agree 100%. I'm not sure he's done it safely. Like, I don't know about that. I don't know. And
I'd rather him roll the dice and figure it out. You know, someone's going to have to do it.
Exactly. Better, you know, it sounds awful, better than us, but I mean, that sort of means someone's going to have to dip their toe in the water and get out there and assume some risk. And Silver even mentioned that to the players the other night. I mean, it's just there's going to be no foolproof system. You're not going to be able to, you know, completely quarantine 3,000 people for 2 months. Things are going to slip through the cracks and someone's going to test positive. What's going to happen then? We have to shut the whole thing down, or you're going to plow ahead as safely and as best as you can? And the UFC is trying to. I'm not sure if he's done it safely or not. I don't know.
I don't know either. And I'll tell you, I wonder, like, again, as he says, he rattles off how many employees he has. Part of me wonders, I don't know, did he ask them to sign waivers? You know, like, again, because it's a relatively small number when you're talking about leagues the size of the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, with all those people involved. Because the one thing I think that someone like Silver would fear is if you instruct your players to come back, someone gets it, and then, heaven forbid, there's a fatality. Like, you know, then all of a sudden you're opening yourself up to potentially lawsuits. You're already hearing the stories about players saying they feel pressured to get back into the gym. There's already some of that stuff out there. That's just, I'm sure the leagues are terrified of that.
I'm sure White has had them sign waivers. And there was a whole dispute there about, there was a lawyer or one of the fighters that said we had to sign non-disparagement agreements or non-disclosure agreements. Yeah. And they asked White about that. I don't know if you've listened to the clip that I sent in the email chain. White goes off on the guy. Like, this Dana White is a piece of work, I'm telling you. I mean, you'll hear more sound from him coming up. But on the thing about teams pressuring players back into the gym, Maz, at the NBA level, I think that's about them not wanting the guys to go to the Equinox or the YMCA or, you know, whatever. They don't want them to go to a public gym. So right. That's how I read that they're encouraging, pressuring, whatever, the players to come into their gym and their facility. And maybe some players took that to mean, oh, they're trying to force me back to practice before it's safe. What I took that to mean is that the teams are trying to, you know, get them out of the public gym and into the team facility.
Right, because they have more control over their environment than they do over someone else's.
Exactly. But a big component to this is the tort reform and the you know, are there waivers or indemnities or these things so it's not one giant lawsuit? Like I got no time for that either. Like, we all understand what this is. Either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. Let's not turn around and sue everybody. Like, that's just a giant waste of all of our time. That would really piss me off, too. But you know that's coming, given how litigious we are as a nation. I want to pick this up on this on the other side with more Dana White in our long commercial-free segment.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And streaming anywhere you go on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You know, the bottom line is the system worked. The system is you want to find people that, you know, what you don't want to do is 2 days after the fight say, oh, Jacare tested positive for. So it worked. I mean, the system worked that we put in place. I mean, most of you that are here have worked with us for a long time. You know how we are. Without sounding like a jackass, we're really good at what we do. We're very, very good at what we do. And the way that this week went, we'll just get better. We'll get better by Wednesday. Then we'll be better by Saturday. And then after Saturday, we'll start to catch our stride and really get this thing dialed in and get it figured out. And the longer this goes, the better the testing technology is going to get, and the faster it will get. We're going to prove by next Saturday professional sports can come back safely.
You go, Dana. I hope he's right. I hope he's right. Some people think he's not. You know, he got, Murray, not just the nanas on Twitter all up in arms, but, you know, like scientists and doctors and... Maz, pronounce it for you. Epidemiologist. Okay, I'm going to try that.
You got it.
Epidemiologist. He got the epidemiologists all up in arms because he did not, according to them, do everything right. And the system wasn't perfect. The system didn't work. You know, again, Sousa drives in. He knows he's been in contact with someone who has COVID, close family member, exposed him to COVID. He still comes into the event, still comes to the hotel, still shows up for the weekend. They test him. And apparently while they're waiting for the results, they still allow him to step on the scale for the weigh-ins. He's wearing a face covering and gloves, but he's tested again prior to the fighter face-offs where UFC President Dana White fist bumps him. He made contact with several athletes during that time. According to a UFC statement, Sousa and his team, again, it's Ronaldo Sousa is the one who tested positive. Sousa and his team, because three of his corner men also tested positive, by the way. So he and the people, his entourage, had tested positive. They left the host hotel to self-isolate off the premises after their positive COVID tests were revealed, although there's some dispute over that because there's some social media postings that he was actually still there, which got a epidemiologist from Atlanta a little hot and bothered by the name of Zachary Biney. And he started tweeting. He said, the timeline is important here. Wednesday, Sousa training in Orlando and knowing he had a possible positive test in his family, travels to Jacksonville. Bad move by him and his people. He says, I hope UFC advised fighters specifically about this situation. He says he arrives, informs UFC of family case, is tested and apparently isolated pending results. That's all good. And then, though, why is he at the stare down on Friday, 2 days later? That's reckless by UFC, he says. And these tweets were from Friday. Today his test comes back positive, fight is off. Hopefully he and all his contacts, including other fighters at the stare down, will quarantine for 2 weeks and stop their particular transmission chain. And he says, no, I don't buy this is a system working as designed and proof that UFC and Dana White are being responsible. At least two very bad things happened, said this epidemiologist. An infected fighter traveled, one, and two, an infected fighter with a family case that he knew about was allowed at a stare down. Actually, the UFC's own statement indicts the hell out of them, says this epidemiologist. So Dana White and UFC is just plowing ahead, man. And I hope he's right. I hope he's right, and the epidemiologists are overreacting.
Well, yes. Look, I think the epidemiologists, in terms of the chain, you know, call it the chain of command, or, you know, the chain that was followed, it was a mistake. I don't think there are two ways about that. I mean, the first rule is that if you've been in contact with someone and there's a chance you're infected, you got to quarantine. As it turned out, this guy was, so they did violate that. White is just operating in this bubble. That's what he's saying is our people are willing to take on the risk individually, and that once we're in this bubble, if we give it to each other, we're going to live with that. You know, or the consequences of that. And so, that, at least to me, that's what it feels like. I don't think there's any question.
So this...
Yeah.
Yeah, go, finish?
No, I don't think there's any question that you know, the first fighter there, Sousa, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question there that, you know, once he got into his car and went to the competition, that was a mistake.
But make no mistake, you know, White was not, he did not appreciate getting blood by the media, Murray. You know, listen to this. Give me number two, Jimmy.
If you come out and you say you want to figure it out and you want to do it, it's like some of these guys out there almost, you know, it's like you were saying, you know, the shit that was being said about me. It's almost like, you know, they try to terrorize you and shame you into, and there would be media members that if I came out and gave any information, they would just start hammering the athletic commission or the hotel or the venue that we were going to with all this, you know. It was a pretty crazy time. And, it really made me dislike the media, big time.
So someone follows up. Were they trying to shut you down, Dana, number three?
You think it was just everybody trying to shut you down?
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. Literally, you know, media calling, hammering these guys. How can you let this event happen? Media who cover the sport. And I'm like, wait till they start getting laid off, right? If I can pull this off safely and everybody can still work, you guys can still have a sport to cover and you know. So let me tell you what, when these media companies, you got the guys who cover the NFL, you got the guys that cover Major League Baseball, you got the guys that cover the NBA, you got the guys that cover MMA. Who do you think's going first? I promise you, it's not the NFL guys. Okay, I'm trying to get this thing going and put on fights. And the guys who are supposed to be covering this sport are calling and hammering these guys, the athletic commissions and the venues and the just. I can't wrap my brain around that one.
This guy's tremendous. Again, I'm rooting for him. I hope he's right. I don't know if he is, but I hope that he is. And that point he makes about the guys that cover the sport, like I you know, some guys on the globe, like Kevin Paul DuPont, that just shut down hockey, and Adam Himmelsbach that just shut down basketball. And I'm not telling you whether those guys are right or wrong. I'm just, it surprises me that that's your livelihood.
Well, this is like Florio's thing too. You know, like
good
dude,
God.
Do you forget how your bread is buttered? You know, like I get it. You know, we should all be concerned about each other as a society, but I don't know. I don't shame you for having your own interests as well. And you know, if that's how you're earning a paycheck and it relies on the sport you cover, well, what are you doing to yourself?
This is your business. This is your shop. This is it. This is your company. I mean, for all intents and purposes, you are tied to them. So you know, I just shut it down. Like, oh God, like those guys. I honestly don't get those guys. I really don't.
Well, they're scared. And I don't say, again, I don't say that critically, because I think people have a right to be scared right now and good reason to be scared. So, you know, no one knows what to do. Everybody's operating with some level of fear. And the fact is that, you know, a large majority of the population is only, you know, moderately, if at all, affected by this thing. Although I will say that the numbers that came out in baseball from that antibody test over the, you know, over
really
the weekend.
Small.
I was a little demoralized by that myself, because I thought more people had it and had withstood it than those numbers suggest. And so to me, that's bad news, not good news. But I do think that, you know, we can't live with the fear forever. You can't live that way.
You should be rooting for Dana White. You should.
Absolutely. So at some point, somebody needs to step out and show us it's possible. Maybe it is him.
Okay. So your calls, I promise, you've been waiting patiently. There's a couple open lines at 617-779-0985 to your phones. After Murray's 90-second update, there are no commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.